Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah. David ministered the 12th hour Apostolic Sabbath time in congregation Mount Zion, the 12th hour in the Oregon, Texas. Today is May 13, 2024, the sixth day of Sivan, 2028. We will start our first service today with the song and then with the prayer thought. And we'll go right on into our part two of the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow by Vicky Holler. And we're on the second part, whom does Babylon personify? And this is, I believe it's page 36. Okay, whom does Babylon personify? Question. Now the light has completely dispelled the darkness, which has long enveloped the subject. A student of the prophecy can plainly see from the symbolism that in the first place, Babylon personified the forthcoming ecclesiastical, political, economic system of the nation, not some institution or organization. Second, that the beast, as she drives, is a figure of her dominion. And third, that it is about to pass from prophecy into the history. Indeed, it's already beginning to loom up out of the hay, as did the shores of the America, to Christopher Columbus and his companions as they approached the great western continent. For the beast being driven by the woman, Babylon, clearly reveals three important truths. First, that the call of the Yahweh's people to come out of the Babylon, Revelation 18:4, is a call for them to come out from among the nations that are symbolized by the beast, which she is driving, ruling, and second, that the called ones are to come out from her sin-filled dominion because it is to be ruined by the plague. And third, their coming out necessitates their going into a place where sin does not exist, and where there is no danger of the plagues falling. Thus their coming out of her dominion must be their going into the Yahweh's kingdom. Then the warning against receiving the mark, Revelation 14:9-11, along with the call to come out, will be repeated with an exceeding loud cry throughout Babylon's dominion. Both those who find themselves in her dominion and those who find themselves out of it must then immediately decide to receive the seal of Yahweh instead of the mark of the beast if they want to escape the wrath of Yahweh. To do this, the former class must come out of her, and the latter class must stay out of her, despite the death penalty for taking such a stand. Revelation 13:15. There must be no hesitancy or indecision on the part of either class. Those who are in Babylon must heed the voice which says, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sin, and that ye receive not of her plague. Revelation 18:4. This is going to be antipathy to Elijah that calls them out, okay, of Babylon. And those who are out must carefully heed the warning, if any man worship the beast and his image. That means if they believe in the Trinity, Catholic, Trinity doctrine of the three in one person of the Godhead, which has been taught in the Adventist church worldwide today by the ministry, and which has been enforced by them. So you have two classes of people in the Adventist church today: those that have accepted the false Catholic doctrine of the three in one person of the Godhead, and overthrow the 2300 days prophecy, and Ellen G. White out of their thinking, out of their belief, and they no longer, those Adventists that no longer believe in the three angels or the five angels messaging, which is the Adventist and the division Seventh-day Adventists, the Shepherd God. They have the two angels, the last two, fourth and fifth, to go with the first three, and they're all called Adventists. Where it says, if any man worships the beast, in other words, he's gone also from Sabbath to keeping Sunday, or he doesn't keep the Sabbath with reverence, he just goes there on, just for social reason on the Sabbath, and his image, and receive his mark in his forehead, or in his hand. The same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, and that is poured out without the mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with the fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angel and in the presence of the Lamb. Revelation 14:9-10. For the light on this subject will spread as the fire in the stubble until it finally illuminates the whole earth. Revelation 18:1. And all who walk in the blaze will have their names placed in the Lamb's Book of Life. They will find deliverance from the enemy's last determined effort to plunge the world into the bottomless pit of the eternal ruin. For them, said the angel, shall Michael stand up, the great prince who standeth for the children of thy people, and at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. Daniel 12:1. For the symbolism now leads us to the final phase of the beast. For the beast of the Daniel 7 and the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13 came up from the sea. But the two-horned beast that represents the United States government of the Democratic Republican Party came up in Washington, D.C. The two states put together, Virginia and Maryland, put together 10 acres. And Virginia, you spell it Virgin, V-I-R-G-I-N. And Maryland, you spell it M-A-R-Y. So they took two states, the Catholic Church did, and they called it Virgin Mary, or Virginia and Maryland. And then they called it Washington, D.C., District of Columbia. But the two-horned beast came up in the earth, verse 11, and the scarlet-colored beast stood in the wilderness here in the earth, United States. So both the earth in prophecy and wilderness in prophecy, the locations in the United States. Revelation 17:3. So for the finding of the geographic location of each beast's government, it is necessary first to ascertain the symbolical meaning of the sea, the earth, and the wilderness. Okay, locates the territories of the five beasts. Since the end of the realm of the nature, the sea is the storehouse, home of the waters. Therefore, in the realm of the symbols, the sea must be the birthplace of the nation, the old country. The five beasts, the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the nondescript beast, along with the leopard-like beast, coming from the sea, do you notice that they represent kingdoms that have arisen in the old country, just as history confirms. Insomuch as the sea locates the territory of these beasts, obviously then the earth locates the two-horned beast's domain as the birthplace of the nation, is symbolized by the sea. Then the earth, the opposite of the sea, locates the domain of the two-horned beast away from the old country here in the United States. But for the finding exactly which one of the new country's governments it stands, well, we must consider the characteristics of the beast itself. Its two crownless horns show two non-royalist governments, while their lamb-like appearance forecasts youthful innocency, and is having the power to dictate who should die and who should not, shows that he represents a nation that leads in the controlling of the world's wealth and industry. For the United States of America, as the only government in the world that answers to all of these specifications, for it originated in a new world, the earth, not in the territories of the ancient world, the sea. It is as the only government that is lamb-like, youthful, and a pure Christian, an upright Christian, established upon the innocent principle of the peace and liberty, having two non-royalist ruling parties, crownless horns, the Republican and the Democratic parties of the United States, as a symbolical sea and earth along with the beast characteristics perfectly locate the abode of each beast. Likewise, the wilderness locates the scarlet colored beast domain. By contrast, a wilderness is the opposite of a vineyard. And since a vineyard is a figurative of the home of Yahweh's people, Isaiah 5:7, for the wilderness can only represent the home of the Gentiles. The beast being in the wilderness indicates that at the time it comes into the existence, that at the time there is a vineyard, obviously, it would be superfluous to designate the wilderness if the whole world is wilderness. For the full details concerning these symbolical beasts, read the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2. Okay, for the certainty that both the vineyard and the wilderness are in the existence at the same time, meaning the Jews and the Gentiles are in existence at the same time with their individual nations, wherever they're located at in the world, shows first that Babylon's ruling the beast reigns only over the wilderness, the Gentile world, and second, that from it are Yahweh's people called to go into the vineyard, the kingdom restored, where there are no sins and where there is no fear of the receiving the plague. Of this kingdom, of the safety, the prophet Daniel wrote, "And in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto the other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Daniel 2:44. I want to tell my people in Africa, Jeff White and y'all, that you all are members of this kingdom, this everlasting kingdom. for the subject of the vineyard now necessitates the analysis of analysis of the 12-star crowned woman and her remnant. It is self-evident that the woman Babylon is as the counterfeit of the woman that brought forth the son of Yahweh, Revelation 12:1, of whom the scriptures said, and when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nursed for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent, Revelation 12:13-14. To begin with, we see from this scripture that the woman left her vineyard, left her homeland of Israel, literally left the borders, and went to across her borders into the Gentile world, homeland Palestine. Back then it was called Palestine, today it's called the land of Israel. And went into the Gentile world, into the wilderness, after her child was born. That is, in her antithetical Christian, what we call apostolic period, when the dragon persecuted her through the instrumentality of the Jews, Acts 8:1-13-46, 50-51. Thus we see that after she was there for some time, conditions became such as to hinder her longer nourishing herself, and that it therefore became necessary that she be nourished by someone for a time and times and half a time. 3.5 years after Yeshua's resurrection, the apostolic church left Palestine, the vineyard. And while she was in the Gentile world, the wilderness, the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, forced the heathen to be baptized into the Christianity. And that was because the Jews had changed their name from Judah to Christian, and now they're called Christians, and their religion is called Christianity. Followers of Christ teaching their own version of the gospel. And to join the church that he might cause her to be carried away, heathenized of the flood, verse 15, while thus flooded, she had to be nourished, sustained by the Yahweh, because her many of her followers were heathenized by the pagan Rome, imperial Rome, and nearly all of those who were not were carried to death by the flood. So those that were heathenized by imperial Rome gave up their religion of the Yahshua being the son of Yahweh that had come to earth. They had to deny that that was the true son of Yahweh once they became heathenized. So they were only taught there's one God in the world, and that's what the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes taught. Only one God. So imperial Rome taught the same thing. And so they all denied the Son of Yahweh. So that was a flood. That was a doctrine that they cast after the woman to cause her to be carried away of the flood. A false doctrine about the 3-in-1 persons of the Godhead that was invented back then. That doctrine was invented to become a controversial point of issue all the time instead of getting to the real issues of Yahshua being the Son of Yahweh and how you're saved by faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, that is to say through the veil, through the sanctuary system, that is to say through the blood of Yahshua. Now that was one thing that they had destroyed, that concept of how you have salvation back then. The same thing as today in the Adventist Church, it teaches the same thing. So, had he not nourished her, kept her in the existence by a miracle, the church would have perished during those dark ages of the religion. True, she has been able to nourish herself since the Reformation, that the unconverted flood are still in her midst. She has, however, this promise of the rescue. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the blood that the dragon had cast out of his mouth. Verse 16. Or literally stated, the unconverted who are now in the midst of the Seventh-day Adventist Church today are to be slain and buried. For the converted are then to be taken into the kingdom. Okay, so those that are labeled as converted Adventists are the ones that believe in the original 2300 day prophecy to begin with of 1844. That's what they call converted today. Now, I guess you could call anybody that joined the Adventist Church today and accepted the teaching of the 2300 day prophecies definitely are converted to a new doctrine, to a new religion, to a new Sabbath, most likely from a Sunday. Then will the dragon be wroth with the woman and make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of the Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua. Verse 17. Stirred to fury over the purification, the dragon will make war with the remnant of her seed. Now the remnant of the woman's seed is the seed of the Gentiles. Believe it or not. Against her personally, though, he will not war, because her communicants, the 144,000, as the first fruits harvest of the Adventist Church, Revelation 7:3-8 and 14:4, those who go first into this everlasting kingdom of Daniel 2:44 and 45, that set up in these last days, and the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now, will stand with the Lamb, for the Lamb has returned and has taken his place upon the Mount of Zion with the 144,000, and he personally has harvested the first fruits out of the Adventist Church by being here in person, the King on the Mount of Zion. That's sure. Revelation 14:1. Here's the palace ground. Thus then the rulers of the tribes, of the 12 tribes of Israel, okay, are symbolized by the crown woman. Okay. So the rulers then are your 144,000, your 12 tribes. And being in their own land, they are protected from the dragon, who consequently persecutes only the remnant, those who are left behind outside of the boundaries of Israel, who are still in Babylon, but who are finally called out of her, Revelation 18:4. It says, for the full particulars on the Revelation 12, read the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2, page 64-82. Okay, so for the first fruits of the kingdom come as a result of the shaking, the separation and the church, as is demonstrated by the parables of the net and of the field, where the good fish are removed from the net, the church, and put into the vessel, the kingdom, Matthew 13:48, and the wheat is taken from among the tares and put into the barn, into the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44-45, the set up in the days of these kings here, and the last parabolic of the hour of the earth's history, and the judgment of the living time and the harvest time, of both the those that are living and those that has to be resurrected from Adam clone down to our time. As the bad fish, they are cast away as a terrorist. They are burned. For a detailed study of the harvest, read track number 3, the judgment and the harvest. For the sacred fish, however, those that are still in Babylon after the purification are taken from among the bad, Revelation 18:4, rather than the bad from among the good, Matthew 13:49. For the dragon warned against them is occasioned by their having the testimony of the Yahshua, that is, that they keep all of Yahshua's statutes and judgments that he represents. And Yahshua mentions that in John 15:10. He told the disciples, if you keep my commandments, the statutes of the sanctuary of Leviticus 23, verse 1 through 44. And incidentally, the first statutes mentioned in that book of the sanctuary is the seventh day Sabbath. And Mark 2:26-27 says, Yahshua is Lord also of the Sabbath day. For it says, dragons warned against them is occasioned by their having the testimony of the Yahshua, the spirit of the prophecy, Revelation 19:10, by becoming commandment keepers instead of worshippers of the beast and his image. The dragon's aim is to keep them from coming out of Babylon and thus from going into the rapidly growing kingdom. Then it is, though, that the world shall behold all of Yahweh's people coming out of Babylon's dominion into their own land. For the truth now being clearly established that the scarlet-colored beast is the symbol of the dominion over which reigns Babylon the Great, the mother of the harlots, it follows that her boundaries will extend as far as the boundaries of the nations that bow down unto her authority. Therefore the call, come out of her, my people, that she be not partakers of her sins, and that she receive not of her plagues, Revelation 18:4, is a call for them to come out of her dominion, that they share not in her sins, nor receive of her plagues. Those who respond to the Yahshua's bidding must have a sin-free place to go into, where they may dwell safely. Though there be neither bars nor gates around it, Ezekiel 38:11, unto this haven they shall be brought forth out of the nations, and there they shall dwell safely, all of them, Ezekiel 38:8, so all thy children shall be taught of the Yahweh, and great shall be the peace of thy children, Isaiah 54:13. For Yahweh's people at that time can no more serve the Yahweh in Babylon and in Egypt than they could have in the days of Ezra or of Moses. For when the plagues are poured upon the Babylon, as the fire and the brimstone were poured upon the Sodom and Gomorrah, then if they be living among dwellings, they can no more escape the damage of the plagues than Lot should have survived the fire had he stayed in Sodom. So all who want to escape the foretold ruin really must come out of Babylon, as Lot and his family came out of Sodom, and this shall therefore come to pass in the last days, that the mountain of the Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountains. So this mountain of Mount Zion, the 12th hour, the house of David, is going to be established in the top of all the religious mountains around the world, and shall be exalted above the hills. That's a small organization, churches around the world. And all, actually, mountain represents kingdoms. It represents nations of the world. So it means that the house of David is going to be established in the top of all of the mountains of the nations of the world. Okay, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all the nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, come ye and let us go up to the mountain of the Yahweh, unto the house of the Yahweh of the Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of the Zion shall go forth the Zion. The only Zion that's in existence at this time is Mount Zion, the 12th hour, house of David. A tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, and thou shalt sit upon the throne of David. That's why this law is going forth, because that's Yahshua teaching the law of the sanctuary in the new and living way, Hebrews 10, 19, and 20. And the word of the Yahweh from Yahushua, and he shall judge among the nation, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into the plowshare, and their spears into the pruning hoofs. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Isaiah 2:24. Read also Isaiah 11:11 and 12:15 and 16. Thus saith the Yahweh, behold, I will take the children of the Israel from among the heathen, whether they be gone, and will gather them on every side, and bring them into their own land, and I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king unto them all, and there shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all, neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgressions, that I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them, so shall they be my people, and I will be their God, their Yahweh. And David, my servant, shall be king over them. Here it is right here. This untypical David, my servant, which is untypical Elijah. This is all this. This is what this is. He is the untypical David has the surname of Yahweh, Elijah or Eliyahu. My servant shall be a king over them. And they all shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments, and observe my statutes, and do them, and they shall dwell in the land that I have given unto Jacob, my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt, and they shall dwell therein, even they and their children's children, forever. Now this forever means from the time that they go into that land. That's here in the 12th parabolic hour. They will never, they're going to dwell in that They say that land forever. Okay. And my servant David shall be their prince forever. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them, and it shall be an everlasting covenant with them. And I will place them and multiply them, and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. My tabernacle also shall be with them. Yea, I will be their Yahweh, and they shall be my people. And the heathen shall know that I, the Yahweh, do sanctify Israel. And my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. Ezekiel 37:21-28. And the confirmation of the truth that the Yahweh's people are again to become a kingdom, Ezekiel's prophecies of a new division of the land is here now is told. For the prophet presents the division of the land entirely different from that of the Joshua's time. Joshua 17. It is to be in the strips from the east to the west. Dan is to have the first portion in the north, and Gad the last portion in the south. So here we have a creation, a new creation of the land of Israel. And that takes place and is mentioned in Zechariah 14 war. Okay, how that is done. Between the borders of these two are to be the portions of the rest of the tribes. The sanctuary is to be in the midst of the land, and the adjacent to it is to be a city. See Ezekiel 48. For the fact that such a division of the promised land has never been made, sure, that it is yet future. Also the fact that the sanctuary is to be there, whereas it is not to be in the earth made new. Okay. Well, the thing is, that y'all don't realize that this earth has been made new when this new sanctuary is set up there in a new location. Because Israel has been recreated. So this is in the earth made new. It helps them understand that. Revelation 21:22. Positivity proves that the unique setup is premillennial. Moreover, the twofold fact that the name of the city is that the Yeshua, the Son of Yahweh, is there. And that its location, according unto the division of the land, necessarily must be different from that of the old Jerusalem of the old covenant, shows that Jerusalem proper is not that city. So then you have to have a whole new Jerusalem city built. And that prophecy is in Zechariah 14. The first has to be ravished and destroyed. And then Antipater Cyrus is going to come, and he's going to furnish the finances to rebuild that new city of Jerusalem. And it has been in the process of being destroyed right now with that war that's going on now in the Middle East. Moreover, the scriptures plainly point out that the Gentiles will be driven out of the Holy Land. And lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, what be these? And he answered me, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. Judah, the two tribes in the south, and Israel, the ten tribes in the north of Samaria, and Jerusalem is the capital of Judah in the south, where your ministry lives, and where they have their location. And the Yahweh showed me four carpenters. Then said I, what come these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah. so that no man did lift up his hand, but these are come to free them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up the horns over the land of Israel to scatter it, Zechariah 1:18-21. Here we see first that the heathen powers and their scattering of the Yahweh's ancient people are represented as the four horns, and later in their casting out of the Gentiles, their own brethren, they are represented as the four carpenters. Thus it is predicted that predicted also pictorially that Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles, there you have it, only until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. 8:21-24. Read Ezekiel 36:37, Jeremiah 30:31. Although our first question should be, what shall we do for the avoiding of the giving allegiance unto the enemies of Yahweh, so as to be found worthy of a place in his everlasting kingdom of heaven here on earth, that is set up and the earth made new here on this earth. Okay. When this evil time shall come, yet the majority make their first question, who is God? For one, to try on his own resources to explain who God is, is for him to try to do the impossible, a venture which can result only in the disappointment. This is seen in the fact that although the Bible plainly states that the place of unwalled villages is in the mountains of the Israel's own land, Palestine, where the fathers of the Israelitish nation dwelt, yet men have attempted to tell us that it is in the America. So it is that in their own craftiness, the Yahweh will spoil and judge the nation. And they that dwell in the cities of the Israel shall go forth and shall sit on the fire and burn the weapons, both the shield and the buckler, the bows and the arrows, and the hand staves and the spears. They shall burn them with the fire 7 years, so that they shall take no wood out of the field, neither cut down any out of the forest, for they shall burn their weapon with the fire, and they shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob those that rob them, saith Yahweh. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give unto Gog a place there of the graves in the Israel, and the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea. And it shall stop the noses of the passengers, and it shall they bury Gog and all of his multitudes, and they shall call it the valley of the Hammon Gog. And 7 months shall the house of the Israel be burning of them, that they may cleanse the land, yea, all the people of the land shall bury them, and it shall be unto them for a renown the day that I shall be glorified, saith the Yahweh. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh, now will I bring again the captivity of Jacob, that's the 12 tribes, 144,000, and have mercy upon the whole house of Israel, that's the whole house, all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and will be zealous for my holy name. After that they have borne their shame and all their trespasses, whereby they have trespassed against me, when they dwell safely in their own land, and none have made them afraid, when I have brought them again from the people, and gathered them out of their enemies' lands, and am sanctified in them in the sight of the many nations, then shall they know that I am the Yahweh, their Yahweh, which caused them to be led into the captivity among the heathen, that I have gathered them unto their own land, and have left none of them any more there. Neither will I hide my face any more from them, for I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, the whole 12 tribes, and saith the Yahweh. Ezekiel 39:9-13 and 25-29. It says, for behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of the Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all the nations and will bring them down into the valley of the Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. Okay, proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into sword and your pruning hooks into spear. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about, till the cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Yahweh. Let the heathen be awakened and come up to the valley of the Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Joel 3:1-2, 9-12. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats, and he shall sit the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Matthew 25:32-34. But unto them that are at his left hand shall he say, and these shall go away into the everlasting punishment, but the righteous into the life eternal. Matthew 25:46. For a complete study of the kingdom, read tract number 8, Mount Zion at the 11th hour, and tract number 9, Behold, I Make All Things New. Page 60, 64. These are some of the future events that are soon to follow the quick succession and the ushering in of the everlasting kingdom of the Daniel 2:44-45 that shall never be destroyed or left to other people in these last days, but it shall stand forever. It's called the Kingdom of David, and typical Kingdom of David. Then follows the closing of the probation and the pouring out of the seven last days, which shall fall upon those who figuratively stand on his left hand, those who are outside of the Palestine. Then, while the plagues are falling, the mightiest of all battles will be fought. The battle of the great day of the Yahweh Almighty. That's found in Revelation 17, verse about 12 or 14. The long expected end of the world, the Armageddon, Revelation 16:12-16. Turning back now unto our present world crisis, since as previously mentioned, the crown kings of today, Revelation 13, have already dwindled unto a handful, and since the churches in their cry for the peace and safety and endeavoring for the clasping hands with one another, we should do wisely now to inquire into the current events that may fulfill prophecy. Because the bone of the contention among the angry nations of the day is in the world's markets, and because the churches are threatened by the totalitarian governments, and this is to press together in the order for the preserving of Christianity, the fact is thereby evidence that the time is nigh for the arrival of the predicted worldwide religious, political, commercial empire, the supposed remedy for the world's ills. Now it is seen that the prophecy of the Revelation 17 and 18, the last scene and the drama play by the nations is about to be enacted. For the warring nations are already divided into the two distinct ideological camps. On the one side are the democratic governments, while on the other side are the totalitarian, or we would call them the Republicans. If the latter continue successfully to prosecute their relentless conquest for the world's dominion and sovereignty, for the only victorious way out of the Christian nations, as they humanly view their plot, will be to surrender their power unto Catholic Church. For seeing the Catholics sit against Catholic and Protestant against Protestant in a mortal combat, they will, in the dread fear, be inspired to saddle the beast and to reestablish the church as a driver in the order for the freeing of themselves from the shackles of the totalitarianism and for the safeguarding of Christianity. They will see victory in this stratagem if it be denied them in the war, for the very evident reason that many of the millions of the communicants of these churches in every army of the totalitarian states allied in the conflict will honor the dictates of the church above those of the respective governments. Such a combination of the circumstances will result in a replication of the international church and state rule of the Middle Ages, and will relegate unto the scrap heap of the world's finest instrument of the human liberty, the divinely inspired Constitution of the United States of America. Since this development will make the world's ills worse, it will signalize that the four angels have let loose the winds, and that the 144,000 Israelites are sealed, Revelation 7:3-8. And what is more, a system that will, on the pain of death for the nonconformity, exact a form of their worship, and that would be worse than the false Catholic Trinity doctrine of the three and one person of the Godhead, and the violation of their conscience is anything but democracy and Christianity. Enforced religion is nothing less than an order of the chirping subject, rather than an order of the voluntary disciples. For the fast-forwarding crowned kings of the nation symbolized by the crown horn of the leopard-like beast and the contrast with the ascending crownless rulers of the nation symbolized by the crownless horns of the scarlet-colored beast show that the world is passing out of the period of the royalist governments and into the period of the non-royalist governments for a totalitarian overthrow of the democracy would endanger the continuation of the nationalistic Christianity. To withstand this storm, the Christian governments will before long seat upon the beast the predicted world queen, Babylon, the great. Then she will say in her heart, I sit as a queen and am no widow, and shall see no tomorrow, no sorrow. I sit as a queen and am no widow, I shall see no sorrow. Revelation 18:7. For this church and state union will bring a time of the trouble such as never was since there was a nation, Daniel 12:1. Nevertheless, whosoever will save, protect his life by the sacrifice of the truth shall lose it, says Yahshua, and whosoever will lose or risk his life for my sake by the standing firm for the truth shall find it. That's in Matthew 16:25. And the prophet declares that at that time shall the Michael, that shall serve the Son of Yahweh, stand up as the great prince that standeth for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of the trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, everyone that shall be found written in the book. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Daniel 12:1-10. Without the Yahshua, no system can unravel the world's tangle. It can only make the knot worse. Babylon the Great, therefore, can endure but a short time, one symbolical hour, and then she will be swept away by the crownless horns, Revelation 17:16. The resultant time of the trouble finally culminating in the close of the probation and in the trumpet and coronation of the King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns, Revelation 19:16, whose right it is to reign. Okay. So it shall be that in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and it shall stand forever. Daniel 2:44. Verily I say unto you, for this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Matthew 24:34. Then and not until then may the world expect peace. Thus, the more sure word of the prophecy that never fails for the telling of the truth is with the declaring that neither England nor Germany, only Babylon, as the great, as the, with the image of the beast, will finally, for a short session, profit by the war. Permanently, though, knowing that the Yahweh's people will be benefited, they shall be made free by the becoming of a righteousness, everlasting kingdom of David, thy inheritance, that prophecy, Daniel 2:44, which shall never be destroyed or left to other people. How necessary, then, that we retain the light thus far shed in our minds by the never-failing word of the prophecy and its historical fulfillment, so that we not only may depart from the path that leads to the destruction, but also may walk in the path of the eternal security. And to this end, let us consider a chapter of the Bible which has ever baffled the students of prophecy, but which now in the light of the present truth has become one of the most simple and comprehensible of the Bible's prophecy, and that is in Daniel 11 and the summary. That which is noted in the scripture. This brings in by studies our contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11, click on audio archive. We're going to close now.